Hi everyone, nice to share space with you this morning. For those for whom it is more comfortable to know how it's going to unfold, I know I'm one of those people that I kind of like to know the schedule somewhat. We'll do some collective arriving and check-ins together that I like to do just to remind ourselves that we're not alone, even though we're in our own homes, but just to kind of like come together. And then after that, we'll practice for about a half hour. I'll share some words on practice. And then toward the end will be an open period for questions or discussion. and if you forgot, or if by the time we reached that part and you forgot what Monique said about like raise hand, this and that, I'll remind you as well. So you can let that go in case there's any grasping mind. And just to let you know how I like to use the view speaker and view and gallery view when we're meditating, I kind of like to be reminded that I'm in a Zoom room full of others. And so I often put it on gallery view, just in case. I don't know if anyone, I'm sure I'd like to think others are like me, where you might be sitting quietly and then you're like, did my Zoom crash? Or something like that. And then you kind of open one eye. I find it helpful to see others. so there's that. And then you can keep it on gallery view if you like during the talk. But if you find it distracting in some way, then that's when I find speaker view can be supportive. So just to let you know that. And so for the check-in bits, it's really optional, but it will be it will include the chat. So if you're kind of like far away from your keyboard or whatnot, now's the time to lean in. And I'd love to know in the chat. Oh, sorry, Monique, is chat open to all right now? Okay, sweet. So if you could make sure that it's that everyone is chosen for who will receive your message. And if you could put in your pronouns and where you're zooming in from, as well as if you're on unceded territory and you know the name of the territory you're on or the original stewards, feel free to add that in as well. That's like part one of the chat, of the arrival check-in bit. So, and then so another thing, as folks are typing that in, you might want to look at, you might want to read what comes in or not. You know, if following the chat is too reminiscent of work and like Slack or something like that, then you might not bother, and that's fine too. So choosing what is supportive. And if you are reading the chat, notice any thoughts that might arise in regards to maybe locations, like curiosity about a certain location, or maybe it's a memory if you've been to that place. Or maybe it's like interest. I also live in Port Townsend, for example. If you're not reading the chat, notice what heart and mind state is here. If it's waiting, impatience, agitation. And so this whole bit, even if some folks might be like, let's just get to the practice already, this is practice. A lot of us spend a lot of time on our devices. And so I find there's little instruction on how to be with our devices in a skillful way. And so this is a kind of little, a short practice with that. All right. And so now there'll be two more chat things. So thank you for humoring me. So a lot of you have put in where you're zooming in from. Now, can you get a little bit more specific? Guest bedroom, dining room table, Airbnb, park, driver's seat of my car or something, you know? So just to paint this little, this picture. And so I like reading this as well, just because, I don't know, it makes me think, it just, I can just imagine you, even if I don't know who wrote Patio necessarily, I can just imagine what it would be like being outside on a patio. Ooh, refreshing shower or cat on the lap or whatever, you know, so it brings to mind for me these images and a felt sense or sensations. And so what arises for you if you are reading? Another thing that happens when we engage with tech is we tend to stop breathing or we breathe in a very shallow way. And so every now and then, remind yourself there is a body, even if we're being pulled out into what we're looking at. So there is a body, and this body is breathing, even if barely, but just often knowing that or acknowledging that, the breath tends to deepen. The last chat bit, how are you entering this space and what do you hope to cultivate? And so again, speaking to your heart and mind state. And again, option to read what folks or how folks are entering. And this one, I find it's quite interesting to notice again the movement of the heart and mind or the thoughts that arise. A lot of times I find this piece is rooted in the heart practices, where there might be joy if someone is feeling ease, or there might be compassion if someone is sharing that they're in pain, whether physical or heart-wise. Sometimes there's loving kindness, just seeing a little bit of yourself in some of these responses too, and then that could spark metta. And then the last bit before we practice is, I just saw the last one, Monique, hoping to harness motivation. Oh, story of my life. So, yeah. And then the last piece, again, optional. If your camera is off, this is the time where I encourage or nudge us to turn the camera on for about 15 seconds, but you don't have to, but just that invitation. So that we're taking in our Sangha in a different way now through the eye door, through these images as opposed to words in the chat. And so what I like to do, and feel free to follow along, is I like to lean in because it helps me see you a little bit more, but also it helps others see you a little bit easier too, because these are quite small small squares or whatever. And so just to take each other in, and you might recognize or know each other already. And then also feel free, or please continue to include those whose cameras are off, taking their profile photos, their names. And then as we're looking at each other, you might bring to mind, like, is that your patio? Or you might recognize someone's name with their check-in up, say, maybe feeling anxious, and you might offer a wish, like, may you be well, may you find ease. And how about actually, regardless of their check-ins, let's, as we look the last couple seconds here, offer some wishes, silent wishes to our Sangha here. And as you might be wishing this to others, remember that there's about 35 people wishing it back to you, a different variation. And so have this kind of two-way street of receiving, giving and receiving. All right. You feel free to lean back, turn cameras off. However, the hard part's done. The camera is on. So you might choose to leave it on. And so, like I said, we'll practice for about half an hour, and I'll share some words on an aspect of practice or something I'm contemplating lately, and then we'll have a discussion toward the end. And so as you choose your practice posture, just notice if you're going into like the posture you often choose. And can maybe for today or this morning, the be open to maybe the posture being different. Like, I don't know, if you feel like you aren't able to bring in the part of you that experiences pain in a seated position in practice communities or in practice spaces, bring it in here and then lie down maybe. You could stand if you like. Of course, you can stay seated, but just trying to widen some of these options for you. And I'm seated on my floor, and I'm actually in a pretty casual position. One knee is up, the other one is folded in, and my arms are on my couch. Just, I don't know, this feels comfortable. And I know there's no Buddha statues like this, but I think it's the quality of awareness that matters and not the posture. So yeah, feel free to be chill. to really indulge in a way, I guess. And eyes can be closed or turned downward. Or if it's helpful, especially if you have a window nearby that looks out onto some nature. So there's like a tree, but all these buildings in my view, but you might look out the window at first and then close the eyes. And to signal to the body and mind that we're arriving or coming to the moment, stack your head above your heart, above your hips. And if you're lying down, how you can do that is by allowing the floor to hold you, by relaxing and sinking down into the ground. Take a few full breaths if that's helpful, or invite the body to relax using words like, may I relax? And relaxation may arise with these deep breaths or this invitation or not, and that's fine. So after you do that, notice how much settling or relaxation is available to you. Maybe a little, maybe a lot. Tune into how the ground is supporting you. How it's gently pressing into your body, holding you here. And with gravity helping us stay anchored, kind of like this hug between gravity and the earth, hugging or holding you. At least that's how I experience it. So tuning into the support. Notice what might be attracting your attention, sounds or sensations, pleasant or unpleasant, thoughts, smells, sights. Just noticing. Now turn your attention, if you haven't already, to an anchor or integrate your personal practice, whether that's reciting loving kindness phrases or following the breath or a part of the body or noticing sound. Gathering the heart and mind for next few minutes in this way. Every now and then you might need to reinvite the body to relax, to settle, to give in to the support of the earth. And that's fine. Undoubtedly, your mind has wandered. And so the next time it does, try to notice the tone you use to bring it back or to replace your attention back on your anchor. Does it feel like you're yanking back, or are you judging, using harsh words? Are they kind and compassionate, or something else? So not making it wrong, but just noticing. Opening up to this micro moment that we might otherwise skip over. And it might not come as a surprise, regardless of how you're bringing your attention back. Invite kindness and gentleness to arise. It may or may not arise, but planting that seed. Relaxing your effort in case you're grasping knowingly or unknowingly to your anchor, not letting other phenomena in. Relax your effort so that more of life can come into your practice. And they're not distractions, it's just life arising in this way right now. You might notice it or note it with a mental label like hearing, feeling, thinking, before returning to your metta phrases or your anchor. for the remaining time. You might practice relaxing your effort even more and let go of your anchor. Practicing more in this open awareness or choiceless awareness kind of way. Trusting in the amount of mindfulness you've established thus far, and also trusting in your natural essence to be aware that with little effort, awareness returns. And so we're practicing being instead of doing, and yet this could feel quite destabilizing for some, especially if this is not how you practice. In which case, you can practice open awareness for a couple minutes and then return to your anchor and practicing in that way for a minute or so. And then again, practicing open awareness a few minutes, returning to the anchor. Kind of like if we were learning to swim, anchor being the side of the pool where we could place our hand. And then practicing treading water, not far from the wall, but still toward the middle of the pool for a few moments before touching base again. And of course, with the attitude of kindness, tenderness, gentleness, as best you can. putting the bell in a few moments. Until I do, you might use this remaining time, about a minute or two, to recommit to relaxing your effort, or to remind yourself of what it is you hope to cultivate in this space. All right. Welcome back. Feel free to adjust your posture, scratch that itch, move that leg, whatever it is you need to do to help you feel present or grounded. So I'm going to share some words on just kind of where I'm at with my practice these days. Some of you might know, because if you've been coming to say other things I've been offering, I've been talking about how I'm kind of obsessed with like contemplating sacred and ritual a lot these days. And in my bio, Monique mentioned Sacred Mountain Sangha, and that's the Sangha of Tanisra and Kittisaro that some of you might know. And I'm just really appreciating my practice with them and their style of teaching, because it brings in a devotional piece that I wasn't getting in the Theravadin practice space. And my first exposure to this style of practice was in Asia, where it was the devotion was so palpable. It was just everywhere. And the ritual and the bowing and the chanting. And then coming to North America, where I don't have to travel as far to practice, it wasn't that. And that was okay for a while, but then I started yearning for it again. And so I gravitated toward T&K. I called them mom and dad, but they don't really respond to that. But I still do. And so, yeah, it's just waking up kind of this contemplation, even though I've been practicing with them for a few years, but I just feel like it's getting, like I'm getting more curious or opening to it more and more and more. So I'm going to share a little bit about that. And just to note, though, that this practice is known to be a path of purification. Some of you might know that. And I don't know if others feel this, but when I would be on retreat or in these practice spaces, even though we're on Zoom, one of the things that I do appreciate being on Zoom is that we're practicing kind of like face to face. When if we'd be in the Dharma hall, depending on how the Dharma hall is set up, often I see the backs of people's heads. but not so much the face-to-face. And so I don't know if anybody peaks or when we're on retreat together or whatnot, but I look around and everyone, even though it's purification, everyone, it seems like everyone's in this like gentle hand wash. Like everyone is just kind of like peaceful, this and that. And I know it's just my mind creating this image or whatnot. But I can't help to do that because for me, it's like, why do they get the gentle hand wash and with the special soap and like the warm water when I feel like I'm stuck on the spin cycle? And so that's like a lot of my practice. I wouldn't say that this path has been easy at all. And yet there's something that keeps me coming back. And I think it's just like when I do get untangled, you know, and sometimes it certainly feels like not tying up straps or ropes or something in the washing machine and it gets all stuck around the middle part. Like even if I'm unable to untangle that when I'm practicing, what I am left with are qualities that I really appreciate walking into life with. And I often think I have no clue how people without the Dhamma in their life, how they go about living. It's just, I'm so grateful that we have these very precise teachings that feel pretty timeless, that are applicable just as much today as they were when the Buddha taught it 2,600 years ago. So anyways, spin cycle or not, I love this practice and how it supports me, basically. And perhaps like a lot of you, whenever I would practice at big centers, I wouldn't see myself reflected in the teaching team or in the examples that were shared or whatever. And that was discouraging. And yet there was something about it that like, it wasn't about them. It's like, I knew this was my birthright. You know, I knew that even though I wasn't reflected and then I would get these maybe explicit or inexplicit messages that somehow I didn't belong, like I knew I belonged when I went deeper than that. And I think of the Buddha, where the Buddha, in order to join his practice community, you had to give up all your belongings and your name, because he didn't care about your status or whatever. He just wanted to make accessible, where everyone was equal in accessing the practices of training the heart and mind for freedom from suffering. And so I held to that as a way to keep showing up. And I'm so happy that there are more teachers of color and teachers from different experiences. And so I'm happy I waited around, basically. as a daughter of immigrants, so I'm second generation Filipina Canadian. Just seeing my parents hustle so much, I was I internalized this message of perfectionism, and I know a lot of us do in different ways, but for me it was be perfect to not rock the boat and get sent back, quote unquote, home, even though I was born in Canada. And so, of course, I brought that perfectionism into my practice because I think society rewards perfectionism, unfortunately. It's like, wow, you're so efficient and you're so detail-oriented. And so I thought like, oh, this is just another place for me to bring that in my meditation practice. And I mean, it worked in a lot of ways, but it didn't, because I started burning myself out on retreat. And I even would just hold myself to this high standard of like, gotta stay with the breath when I'd practice. And so then when my like timer would go off, and if like the people around me, so of course it's like the ones that are closest to you. So my mom and my partner at that time, would get the brunt of me holding them to impossible standards too, because that's what I was practicing. I wasn't necessarily cultivating qualities of the heart. I was cultivating perfectionism just in this way that looked good because it was meditation. Yeah. Yeah, and it took gosh, I felt like, I think it took a long while, like maybe 10 years of my practicing like that. And of course, there were moments where I relaxed a bit more, but it took a while for me to see that how I was practicing was not really onward leading. And onward leading, we use that word to mean just like leading toward less suffering for myself and others. So I wasn't practicing in a way that was onward leading. What I was doing was good, I think. And maybe we all think because we're here together, but how I was practicing wasn't helpful. And that's what I was trying to point at, if you were awake enough to hear some of the meditation cues, because I know how it goes. I was inviting folks or inviting you to pay attention to just when your mind would wander, what is, how were you bringing your attention back? Was it with judgment? Was it with kindness? Was it something else? So just to start highlighting the how. Yeah, and then I realized that in the when I started tuning into the how, I was holding this view, so this unwise view that there was good practice and bad practice, or good practitioner, bad practitioner, good meditator, bad meditator, which is rooted in that false belief that I cultivated as a young child of like good girl, bad girl kind of thing. And that's not true. The Buddha himself would say, when the mind is scattered, know when the mind is scattered. And when the mind is gathered, know when the mind is gathered. He didn't say anything like when the mind is scattered, you've been a bad girl or something like that, It's nothing like that, or like you need therapy or whatever. It was just like, know what it is, know that your inner landscape. And when we're able to know or tune into our inner landscape, then we'll be able to choose more wisely. So not judging if I'm agitated, not making agitation the enemy, but like, okay, agitation is here. So maybe I need to, I don't know, take it a little slower today, not open and close the 80 tabs I have open on my browser or something like that. So just kind of tuning into how. And that's a little bit also what I was trying to encourage you to do. It's like that tune into how, but also relax our effort. And I think as folks of color, because society tells us this, we need to work twice as hard to be half as good. And so I think it's normal, although unnecessary, that we bring in this hardworking attitude in our practice. Or I don't know what your storyline is, but mine is unworthiness. And so just kind of like I would try to practice in a way to earn worthiness in the eyes of these teachers that don't know my experience or don't look like me, don't share experiences like me. And I still get caught in that, but less so now. But it's a strong, that patriarchy or white supremacy, it's strong. It's really strong, how it infiltrates so many areas of our life. Yeah. And of course, it's no surprise that the world is also getting more intense and more extreme, more divided. And on the personal level, and also on the collective, so on both fronts, basically. And so there's a few things. Of course, this practice is really helpful, especially in this way that is more receptive. So less of the doing, but more of the being. So having a little bit of that receptive quality is helpful, but sometimes it makes it harder. I don't know if folks feel this, but it's like the more we practice, the more tender we become. And who has said, and you don't have to raise your hand, but I've certainly said this many times, fairly recently too, where it's like, I'm too sensitive for this world. It's like, I can't do this. And I even would think, and I remember talking to Jack Kornfield about this, like thinking, I'm too sensitive to be a meditation teacher. Because when on retreat, when like the whole group, because we do one-on-ones or group interviews, as some of you know. And so when the bulk of the retreat is going through like their emotional, like holding a lot of emotion, I just like spend time in my room and cry. and then after when like toward the end of the retreat, when people are really harvesting the fruits of practice, I feel that too. And I was teaching a lot of in-person retreats then, and I remember being like, I can't be on this emotional roller coaster every week. It's so intense. And what Jack said to me, and I offer it to any of us who think we might be too sensitive, it's actually our gift. And on the flip side is what we're seeing in the news and in the world, this hardness, this closedness. No, is that the way? No, but I do sometimes think it looks easier. But I remind myself, like, of course, choosing qualities like anger and division is easier. It's harder work to rest in nuance and both and instead of either or. It's harder work. And I think that is the kind of work that is onward leading, that can lead to freedom from suffering. But in the meantime, a couple things that really help me when things feel hard, when the world feels hard, when I feel like I'm quote unquote too sensitive. One of the things is turning to the sacred helps me. And then, pardon, hold on a second. I'm getting over a cough. Turning to the sacred and turning toward Sangha has been really helpful. And turning to the sacred, I find is hard to do because, you know, for many reasons, we live busy and distracted lives, or we move fast. We've got like an endless to-do list. And so it's really hard to slow down. And opening to the sacred for me happens when things are quiet, you know, when there's less agitation in my heart and body. And often nature helps. And I know that's not possible for everybody, you know, for those of us who might not have cars or who live in the city, et cetera. But I live in the city. And so, like I said, right above my camera, there's a tree and there's all these buildings around. But if I focus on the leaves blowing in the wind, I might be able to touch into the sacred there to remember like, oh yeah, nature is a companion on this path. Maybe it's like a day trip or something like that that could be helpful. Or just, yeah, something about the slowing down, because my apartment is empty right now, which I'm grateful for because my mother-in-law is visiting. Another story. But I was just like seeing the light come into the window here. And so just that even was sacred to me. Once when I was on a long retreat, it was really challenging for many reasons. And I just was losing it. I was actually like on the brink of having a panic or an anxiety attack. And because I was burning myself out with all that efforting that I talked about earlier. And I remember going into the woods and there was like this huge rock and I just kind of like laid on top of it. And I was wailing. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I feel like I'm breaking. And then all of a sudden, there was this voice that was like, oh, my child, yes, you are. You are breaking free. And I was like, I snapped out of my tears because I was like, what? Who said that? You know, it was a little freaky. And it came from inside of me, you know? And so there was a trust in there. So I do believe that the sacred yes, we can use things like the light coming through the window or nature to remind us of the sacred, but the sacred is inside of us. And so I like to think, or because of my work with Tanisra and Kittisaro, and they use Kuan Yin, the goddess of compassion, as their muse, let's say. Kittisaro said, oh yeah, that was Kuan Yin visiting you. And so on that particular retreat, and it doesn't need to happen on retreat, but I remember being like, oh, well, if this is Kuan Yin, like, I don't want to be a fair weather buddy of Kuan Yin's. Like, I don't want to only call on her when I'm about to have a panic attack. And so I tried to have this, like, cultivate this relationship with her. And so sometimes when mornings are quiet and I see the light coming in, I might say like, hi, Kuan Yin. Hey, girl, kind of thing. There was a time when I was having a really hard time sleeping. And so I imagined myself putting my head in Kuan Yin's lap. So it's as if Kuan Yin was sitting cross-legged at my headboard. And my head was in her lap, and that she was putting me to sleep by wishing me kindness or sending me well wishes. I've been waking up with a headache lately these days, related to the mother-in-law, who knows, kidding, sort of. But the other day I was just tired of like having this headache in the mornings. And so at night I was like, can you do a girl a favor? Can you, I really like, don't want this headache tomorrow. See what you can do. Like, what strings can you pull, Kuan Yin, kind of thing. And I didn't wake up with a headache. So that was pleasant. So I like that. Yeah, the sacred has our back when we turn toward it. We start cultivating it, and it could be in really small ways, you know, like I think the word sacred, if it's not already part of our life, it could feel like this big and heavy thing, but I've experienced it in just like these really sweet and small subtle ways that it's all around us, but we just don't slow down enough to notice it, basically. And then of course it's turning to the collective or turning towards Sangha. That has also helped me when I feel like things are really hard or just needing to lean on someone. One of the places I practiced in my earlier days was in Thailand. And there was this huge, on the monastery, this huge, huge, huge Bodhi tree. And the Bodhi tree is the tree under which the Buddha obtained his enlightenment. And it said that it was like a seed from that tree that was planted in Thailand. So it's like a relative of the original Bodhi tree. And for those of you who know Bodhi trees, they have these big, huge branches that kind of grow out and far away from the trunk. And one of these huge branches could have easily fallen into the courtyard of the monastery. But instead, what the whole village does is they have these like huge wooden, it almost looks like pitchforks, and then they prop it under the branch to hold it up, and then they paint it. And so I kind of imagine that when we turn toward the collective to help us with the suffering, it's like we're propping each other up. And what I appreciate about the collective is that sometimes when I need to be propped up, others have the energy to hold me. Then I resource. And then when they get tired of doing that work, then I can prop them up. You know, so it's this dance. It's not like we need to keep going all the time, but really can some move forward, others move back, etc. There was this quote, this, yeah, this quote from a Thich Nhat Hanh nun, An Huang Nguyen, who had said, "Place your suffering in the cradle of the Sangha." I just love that, the cradle piece in particular. Place your suffering in the cradle of the Sangha. And that's just like, again, this reminder that I can hold something on my own, but if we're two people holding it and that other person is resourced, it could feel infinitely lighter because one, I know that I'm not alone and we're both carrying this, both the individual stuff and the collective stuff. And the individual stuff too, because I think what our practice helps us do is that we get so specific with our own suffering, which is the invitation of the First Noble Truth to really understand and know suffering, that the details, like the storyline or the characters, falls away. And then we're left with the essence of, say, that suffering. And then it's when we touch into that essence, that's what connects us all. You know, because your suffering is the same as my suffering, even though the context is different. So it's really this, like we get so specific that it opens up the universal for us. And in that universal, I think that's where the interbeing or the interconnection or interdependence really lives. And for me, that's the gift of this practice. A lot of people come to, maybe at first their doorway in is mindfulness, to lower their blood pressure, to sleep better or something. And I teach a lot of mindfulness, but when I do teach in those settings, I teach as like, this is just the beginning. You know, there's so much more, kind of thing. And for me, it's like the gift is that, the interbeing, the interconnection. One of so Master Hua, who is to Nisran Kittisaro's Mahayana Buddhist teacher, he would say, "All living beings are my family, and the universe is my body. All living beings are my family, and the universe is my body." Yeah, I love that. The universe is my body. Beyond just the earth is my body. You know, the universe is my body. I mean, there's so much I could say now, but I do want to leave time for discussion and questions. But maybe I'll just end with when we don't love ourselves fully. And that love for me sprouts from the being, the listening, remembering my natural essence, you know, putting down the doing. When we aren't able to trust or love ourselves fully, we deny our own sacredness. And when we deny our own sacredness, we opt out of the sacred web of life. And then when we do that, it's like, if we don't see our own sacredness, of course, it's so much harder or impossible to see the sacredness in others. And so, you know, depending on what your motivation is, if it's, you know, is it for others? Is it for yourself? I think it's like that two-way street that I was saying earlier. I think when we could maybe use seeing the sacredness in others as a doorway to see it in ourselves and vice versa. And as Rilke has said, everything terrible needs our love. And so I'm not saying that you're terrible, that's not it. It's when we're able to touch into our own sacredness, then that can really expand out. And that's what the world needs. We don't see it in the news a lot unless we go looking for, you know, these good news websites or whatever. But that's what is needed. And in that way, you know, the Buddha was a radical, doing different things, going against the grain. And I think that's how we go against the grain by spending time cultivating, and it's a slow cultivation for some, for a lot of us, but cultivating qualities that we don't see reflected back to us in the news or whatnot in the world. And yet we're still on this path. We're still doing it. So thank you for doing it in the imperfect ways we do it.